Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for Movies and Booze. Fionnuala Jones, Michelle Lawler and Sterile Watch owner Brian Lawler. Yes! are with us once again. I don't know why Brian is wearing like this blingy watch.
It's not a blingy watch.
It is a bit blingy.
It's pretty blingy.
It's pretty blingy. GMT with a Jubilee band.
And a Jubilee band?
That's what it's called, Jubilee band.
It's a what?
Okay, it's a Pepsi case. Yeah, it's a Pepsi case. That's what they call it, the blue and the red.
Okay.
And then this thing here is called the Jubilee. And if Leslie was here, he'd back me up. Not that I'm glad you're here, but I'm just saying.
Might be uninvited to the party.
Just saying.
No, Leslie loves watches.
Leslie loves watches.
He's big on the watches. Yeah. And the Pepsi means just the colours rather than the drink.
It's the colours.
Yeah.
Blue and red.
Okay.
And Tom Selleck wore it in Magnum.
And you better explain to, because I said it now, what's a Sterile one?
It means there's no branding on it whatsoever. So it's not like a Rolex or a Tudor or, you know, a Mate Tissot or whatever. It's just like there's no branding on it. Like.
Okay. And who makes Sterile watches?
You can get them online.
You can get them online.
I know a guy who can.
All right, okay. But you mentioned something about the American military.
So there's a whole thing apparently that the U.S. military hand these out. So it's basically if you don't want to be identified, like, you know, the way that you can't like have your dog tags taken off you and all the rest.
Okay.
They give them these watches that doesn't have any branding on them.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So they can't be identified.
Okay. So you're wearing a piece of equipment from a genocidal war machine.
That's correct. Lovely. Yes, I am.
Enjoy.
Or a secret agent, maybe.
Yes, I
am. Telling us.
Yes, I am.
God. Oh my God.
Why don't you tell us what movies we're going to be talking about today?
F1 the movie.
Yes, I know. Amy, just F1 sounds like an insult.
It does. I know. It totally does. Yeah.
And like the best insults.
Yeah. So F1 the movie, which is possibly the greatest piece of product placement on film I think I've ever seen.
Really?
And I know. I mean, this is a 3-star film. Don't get your hopes up here. Yeah. This is like 3-star all the live long day. But it is kind of fascinating how commercial and how utterly mercantile this film is. It's fascinating. And then we're going to be talking about Akira Kurosawa's Ran, which is back in cinemas for its 40th anniversary this weekend.
Okay. Apparently Tom Selleck wore it.
Yes, that's right. Yes, Tom Selleck wore it in Magnum PI. Correcto mundo, whoever that
is. Right, okay, when he was wearing the really tight shorts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've got them too.
That was, yeah. I always thought, like, I'm surprised he's still alive.
He's like 82 or 83.
I know, yeah, but like two shorts, like you'd give yourself a stroke no matter where you were.
But like, it's, you know, like they cut off at a certain point. Like maybe it's the whole thing of like the air getting at the legs is what's kept them kind of mobile for so long.
Yeah, I don't know. So our wines today,
on, I suppose, a more palatable note, our wines today are from the Penedès region, which is 30 minutes from Barcelona, a beautiful wine region and amazing in that it's one of the few wine regions in the whole world that makes world-class red wines, world-class white wines and world-class sparkling wines. There's nearly no region in the whole world.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
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 And presumably it's south of Barcelona or the north of Barcelona, because that would be France, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Or the sea.
Yeah.
So it's inland. I'd say nearly like parallel inland, 30
minutes. Yeah.
But someone else was driving, and you know when someone else is driving, you just have no idea what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Passenger princess.
Like, yeah, like, yeah. So I literally...
Yeah, well, you know, I was in Barcelona a couple of weeks ago, but like outside Barcelona, it's quite hilly.
Yeah.
So do you go up to these
vineyards? Go up into the mountains, so it's high up, it's a higher altitude, and it's amazing. Did you see that mountain, the Montserrat mountain range?
Yeah.
Wow. It's just so magnificent. It's just flat like a giant tabletop, isn't it?
Mm.
Anyway, so you're up in the mountains, inland, and the valley is split in two, and you've just got... It's really interesting because obviously it's in Catalonia, and there's a whole "we want to be free" mentality. And so when you're there, the winemaking culture also embodies that. Like there's this whole sense of it's unique in itself. And there was one guy, one of the winemaker's sons, he only spoke Catalonian or English, refused to speak Spanish. It was amazing. Cool.
Yeah.
And he was really good at it. Like he's actually a big social media chef in Catalonian or English, no Spanish. Anyway, it's a really cool region. I am so excited to be able to talk about it.
Okay, cool. Fantastic. Someone says, the shorts. That's why I never noticed the watch.
Yeah,
that's probably why. So the BBC, now this is kind of in their online content, but the BBC are basically ruining their own programming by giving too much in the way of spoilers.
Kind of, yeah. And they've said that going forward, they're going to be more mindful. Obviously, so Shuja just finished up as Doctor Who. I won't say who's replacing him because of the nature of this story, even though the news is out a few weeks. But basically, I think it was not particularly expected that he was going to be wrapping up, because I think he's only done two seasons as the Doctor in Doctor Who. And basically there'd been a new story gone up announcing it as such. And I think the original headline didn't say who was replacing him. And then it was updated shortly after to say who it was. Mm. And fans had gripes with that to say, you know, what if we hadn't watched? And like, it's a that's a fairly sizable spoiler. It's a big talking point for Doctor Who fans. So they've had to come out and say, yeah, we're going to be more mindful, because people did complain. They said others requested that BBC be more particular in the use of headlines. So yeah, are we gone too far with spoilers? Spoiler protection?
In this particular slot, over many years, we regularly would get complaints about spoilers. Mm. Now, to the extent that, like, most films, most stories have a premise.
Yeah.
Something happens to a person. There's a set of circumstances that prompt action.
And if you're listening, like, my attitude is, if you're reading that interview, or if you're reading a news piece, or if you're reading a review, you don't care about spoilers. You're saying, how else are you supposed to review it without discussing particular points? Now, obviously, like, say, something like, I don't know, The Empire Strikes Back. You don't want to give away, you don't need to give away the end to discuss the film. But something like with Doctor Who, and I won't say you're the person replacing, but like, it's a big deal. Like, you kind of, if you're going to talk about it, you have to be able to talk about that person's name. So it's on you, basically, to not read it and not read the review or not read the news piece.
I think because in the news piece, it did have a spoiler warning, and lots of places will now, or even in like social coverage, they'll go, you know, it'll be like that twist, whatever, which you'd argue that's nearly a spoiler.
That's almost clickbait.
Yeah, there's an element of that, or like they'll redact names or whatever, but there's no point having a spoiler alert in, like, we'll say, the body of the article if the headline is already, you know what I mean? And you could be scrolling BBC News looking at something else, you know what I mean? And then you see that and then you are perturbed, you know what I mean?
If it's in the headline as well.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I am more team you, but I kind of do get why.
I get it. It's annoying, remember when Game of Thrones was on the go and everyone was like, okay, you just stay away from the internet until you got home and watched it.
Or whatever,
and then you could start going through news again.
I'll find if I'm watching a series and I'm like, oh, I just need to know. I'll Google the end of it, like episode 4.
Brand, there you go, fine.
I can't tell my other half, although now he knows.
But you have to act surprised then when something shocking happens?
A lot of the time.
Why would you just wait?
I can't wait. I would, if I have a book, I'll like read the last three pages.
Oh, jeez.
I just need to know.
Why?
This helps me understand the characters better.
No, but you do this. My wife does this.
It's the journey, surely,
it's
no?
The journey. My wife does this all the time when we're watching the film. It's like, who's that? I was like, I don't know. Let's find out together. Let's enjoy this.
Or Google film. It.
Or, like, don't Google it.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Actually, Texter says, I hate when people say, I won't tell you about the twist at the end. If I now know there's a twist, that is a spoiler.
Yeah.
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 That's fair.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That happened recently with another show that I can't think of, but I feel like that now with the Bear, obviously new season is out and I'm not that far into it and I'm trying to avoid things.
Because they say there's something going on there. I've watched the first two episodes.
Yeah, so have I. Yeah. We're on the same page. I don't know, but again, it just feels so, especially when all the episodes drop at once and then it's a very much like race to the bottom. How quickly can we get our review out or like whatever our discussion around it? I was watching it
at like 1 o'clock in the morning as soon as it dropped, like, because they didn't give out screeners to a huge amount of people. Like,
yeah, it was weird because like I read a couple of reviews of it, which were, it's really come into itself, or this is garbage.
Yeah.
Very mixed views.
They really didn't, like, I don't know what it was about this particular season, but they didn't do a huge amount of promo for it and they didn't really kind of distribute the screeners as much as they normally do. Like John Fardy, I know, got one, but I didn't get one. And normally it's not a one or the other. They normally just send it to everybody. Like, and I don't know why that was. And I really, really wanted to see it, like, because I've loved the past three seasons of it. Like, so I was desperate to see it. But yeah, I had to stay up until 1 o'clock in the morning watching it, like, just to try get as far into it as I could, because I had to go review it the next morning.
Okay. Like, so. And what was your take?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. I don't, like, people need to stop. Like, it is fantastic. It is so good. It's so good. I don't, like, I read some of the reviews. Like, I read the one from New York Magazine. And it's like, were you watching the same thing as I was? Mm. And, like, I saw Ed Power's review in the Irish Times.
Yeah.
Like, Ed Power needs to, okay, never mind. Sorry.
Okay.
I'll cut myself off there. But, like, I thought it was a very ungenerous review, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, because from what I'd even read about it, that was my sense that people seem to be watching different programs.
Yeah, completely. And again, like, I think okay, fair enough. It has a very distinctive style. It has a very distinctive kind of approach. It can be one part artsy, one part corny, one part up its own hole. And that can be a lot for people to kind of process and stuff like that. And you can just kind of lock in on one thing and say, no, I don't like this. But I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. There is a lot of montages in it.
Which, and I like since, that.
No, but the thing was that the montages were propelling the story. Yes. They weren't just for the sake of it.
No.
Kind of thing.
And the song choices were brilliant. Mm. Come on. That is a fantastic. So the sound, the music supervisor, 10 out of 10. Fantastic.
For music from a particular era, but I suppose that probably reflects the characters.
And, yeah, like the kind of Gen X people making. Kind of thing, yeah.
Now, there was once or twice where they were playing, the music was continuous, yes, and it was under scenes. And we said, I would have faded it down there just so we can concentrate on the dialogue a little bit, but that's a fairly small.
Yeah, and if anyway, you've ever been, and you'd know this as well.
It's like, very detailed.
No, yeah. But if you've ever been in a kitchen, like, it's all kind of cacophony. Like,
oh, anyway. Yeah. And I would think the nature, anyway, of the food and wine business is, it is artsy. It is poncy.
Yeah.
It is, and it is really, like, fastidious and sensuous. Yes. It is, and it is passionate. And actually, when I first started working in a wine shop, I was like, geez, this place is the best place on earth, because it was full of passionate people loving what they did, and there was always amazing music, yeah, in the shop. Was the best bit.
But the thing that Bear always leaves me with the same question. Why do people do this for a living?
Yeah, I know.
Oh my God. It's nothing but stress. The hours are terrible.
He was like, they're getting up at 8 a.m. and they're only finishing at like after 12. That's awful. They don't work all those hours, do they? I was like, no, they do, babe. They
really
do.
In real life?
5 days a week. Yeah.
No, now I would say, but like the last time I worked in like a restaurant, I probably finished a decade ago, but they would be like in, you know, maybe at 9, there might be 2 shifts, an early shift and a late shift, but yeah, you'd be in all day and it's hot and it's intense and the pressure. And then you have, like, I always find as a waitress, you'd be in the middle between, say, if there was an upset guest. And then I remember I worked in London, bringing a plate of food down for a piece of fish that was undercooked and there was beetroot on the plate. Anyway, I was like, hi, chef. Grimace, please don't be angry with me. But, you know, the customer said they didn't like the fish and the chef got the plate and threw it against, because I was on the wall and all the kitchens are generally tiled white, and broke behind me. But because there was, I know, this is like old school.
Yeah.
Whoops, Daisy. So this would have been, say, 2007 in London, and the plate broke behind me, but because it was beetroot on the plate, blood everywhere. I can still see it in my head. Sorry. And it was the bones of 20 years ago.
Oh, my God. The worst culprits are spoilers of the studios themselves. They put out long trailers showing all the best bits and explaining everything, which is a good point. Even the title of The Empire Strikes Back is a spoiler. I was totally not expecting them to strike back.
Come on.
Right. So let's move on to our first wine of the day.
Let's have a taste of wine. Now, I nearly fell off the chair there, but I hadn't had any wine yet.
Easy tag.
I'm so excitable. So the wine that we have here is a cava from the Penedès region. So cava is sparkling wine produced in Spain in the traditional champagne method, but you can produce it in various places in Spain, not just Penedès, but this is a Penedès one. This is a Gran Reserva, so it's aged for 36 months, and the grapes in this particular one, so it's Maria Casanova, are Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. So very much trying to emulate the champagne style. Has everyone had a little taste of this?
Yeah.
It smells lovely.
So
lovely.
Just lovely.
Now, if I could be anything, I'd be a sparkling wine. Yeah. So delicious. Like, why wouldn't you?
A girly whirly drink.
So Maria Casanovas, who produces, have been making wine since the 80s, but they're in this beautiful piece of property. And what's really unique about Penedès, apart from the fact that it's one of the first wine regions in the world that can do world-class red, world-class white and world-class sparkling, the whole region is going to be organic by the end of 2025. And it's the first major wine region in the whole world where you're farming organically. And when you go there, it was really interesting. I was there in the middle of May. And when you arrived in, I was like, wow, it's a very green place for somewhere that's very hot. Mm. But they've had so much rain, having had years of drought. And so the place is really green and really lush. And there are just wildflowers everywhere. It was just amazing. And there's this whole sense of, you know, you go to some, if anyone's ever been to a wine region, and it's just vineyard. When you go here, it's like polyculture. There's so much going on. It's a real part of the identity. And anyway, I just think the wines are amazing. Maria Casanova's famously, her wines were the house pour, so it's a sparkling wine, in El Bulli, which was the best restaurant in the world for a record-breaking 5 years. So it's really high quality, organically farmed. This is Brut Nature, or Brut Nature, if you've ever seen that phrase written on a bottle of sparkling wine. And so what it's telling you is that it's natural, that there's no added sugar, because a lot of times when you're going to make any champagne, be it any of the big brands that you're going to get in the shop or the smaller ones, they will add a little bit to make it ferment after the first piece of the wine is made. They'll add a little bit of sugar and a little bit of yeast to start the ferment to make it, the bubbles come. And how you get your bubbles in your bottle of cava is, if you can imagine a kettle boiling, okay, you need to leave the lid off to let all the steam go out.
Mm.
When a wine is fermenting, you need to leave the tank open to let all the gases out. But with champagne, it's closed. And so the gases are created, have nowhere to go, and they go back inside the bottle. And that's what, so each bottle is effectively a microbrew. I mean, why is my bottle so expensive? It's a very labour-intensive thing to make. But this one, they don't add in any sugar. So it's bone dry. And when I first started working in the wine industry...
It is very dry, yeah.
It is very dry. And when I first started working in the wine industry, before the chef threw a plate at my head, we were always told that Laurent Perrier Brut Nature was the drink that Kate Moss drank, because it was the skinniest drink that you can get because there was no added sugar. But it's funny, you know, how do you remember things? But also when you think about if you're, because champagne, and this is obviously a cava, but champagne standard, it's a really, really versatile drink. It's not just for aperitifs. It pairs with nearly everything. And you don't put sugar on your steak or your fish or your salad. You put salt. And so the drier your wine is, 99.9% of the time, the better it will go with food.
Okay. You have you watched any of The Bear, actually?
No, I haven't. I'm going to watch this again.
Okay, you must, because there's a scene in the second episode where... The guy who's the kind of
the sommelier
from The Bear is goes off to talk with this woman from another restaurant, who gives her this kind of like, gives him this talk where it was so basic that you're thinking,
you're almost kind of insulting.
Did you know nothing? You know what he was asking? Well, do you always eat does red? Yeah, can you ever have red wine with fish?
Was he asking for the laugh?
No.
What? Like, even I knew that, and I don't even drink. Even I knew you don't drink red wine.
I thought that kind of didn't ring true, but I suppose maybe, you know.
I would say a lot of times, like, there are qualifications you can get to be a wine professional, but sometimes people fall into it. And I've been in wine shops a lot of times, and I'll hear someone asking for a bit of advice, and I'll hear the advice, I'm like, wow, that is so wrong. But someone has heard it, regurgitated badly, and it's gone around in circles. And so a lot of times, you know, you kind of need to speak, if you want good advice, to the manager, the person in charge, who you know has got, like, a good grasp of what's going on. Because once I jumped in, I was like, I'm sorry, that's so wrong. I can't let you leave with that bottle. That's not what that man is telling you that is. But it does happen quite a lot. I would say it's quite normal to have someone in a wine buying position and they mightn't know that much.
Oh, interesting. Okay, what movie will we talk about first?
F1, the movie, I guess.
F1 coming up after this.
I'm sorry, Ruben, for demolishing not one, but both of your lovely cars, for coming back into your life only to destroy it.
Is this your revenge for Monaco?
Yeah, I waited 30 years and came all this way to humiliate myself on global television.
Funny, you think I brought you in to make my other driver quit?
Listen, he's cocky, he's arrogant, he's got a lot to learn.
You were cocky, you were arrogant, and you had a lot to learn.
I'm not here to hold anyone's hand, I'm here to race.
No, you're not. Sonny, you're here to give me a heart attack.
Right?
Yeah, you're here to race.
Yeah. You can't handle the truth. That was F1. Let me guess.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Pitt is the aging, once legendary race car driver who's to teach life lessons to the younger cocky one.
Correcto mundo.
Thank you.
You got it in one. So he plays Sonny Hayes, who was this hotshot Formula One driver, but had a horrific crash. Left the entire industry and then was off basically racing other kind of stuff. Like he was doing stock car racing. He was doing like Baja beach racing and stuff like that. And his old mate from his Formula One days, Javier Bardem, who you heard there, now has his own Formula One team. His team is doing absolutely terribly. The last driver quit. So he basically is scraping the bottom of the barrel and calls his mate Brad Pitt to come back to the team and try to give them basically a kick up the hole to try to get them back on track. This is essentially just Top Gun Maverick with a redress. And I really do. I mean, like, same director, Joseph Kaczynski, same scriptwriter, Aaron Kruger. It's old meets new. It's, all your computers aren't going to tell you how to race, son.
Yeah.
All this kind of stuff. And that's fine. I mean, like, the original Top Gun by Tony Scott was essentially an advertisement for the US Navy. And Top Gun Maverick was much the same as well. This is one big advertisement for Formula One as a concept to try and sell it to Americans, because Americans just don't get it. I mean, they've got NASCAR, they've got the Indy 500, they've, you know, the current rise of fascism in America. They have enough going on. They don't, like, Formula One is not going to kick
so
it.
Many pastimes.
They have so many.
Is it going to be fascism or football tonight? You know, I can't decide.
Come on, like, they've got the baseball, and then they've got, like, you know, mass deportations. They have enough in their plate. But they're trying to make Formula One a thing in America, and they feel like this is the way to go about it. It's very well made. It's incredibly well shot. Like, I mean, with the stuff that Joseph Kosinski does in terms of the cinematography, this is incredible. Like, he literally, like, straps a camera onto the top of a helmet and drives it, like, at full tilt. The music by Hans Zimmer, brilliant, really propulsive. When you see this in IMAX, the entire screen is vibrating. Like, it's incredibly well done. The story is as meat and potatoes as you can get. Like, you could literally, as you say, you could watch 2 minutes of this and you'd be able to tell the entire story from start to finish. Like,
yeah.
It is very much meat and potatoes, not a whole lot going on. Kerry Condon is in it and is in her full Turles accent, doesn't drop it for a second. It's great to hear. She's actually, there is an Irish woman in Formula One in one of the teams, and she's kind of playing like a sort of a fictionalized version of her. But there's a romantic subplot, and I'm not giving that away because it's in the trailers. There's a romantic subplot between her and Brad Pitt that just feels very forced and very, very tacked on. And there are scenes in this that, you know, the level of product placement is almost hilarious. Like, there's one bit where Damson Idris, who's the younger race driver, he whips out his IWC, he looks at it, fully in focus.
This is a watch, an IWC.
This is a watch, sorry, yeah. An IWC is a very fancy watch. Whips out his IWC watch, looks at it, puts it down, then takes a drink of a Heineken 00. Again, in perfect focus, you can see the label so clearly. Takes a drink of it, and then goes, yeah, I've had enough for tonight, and then walks out of the party. The party is sponsored by Heineken 00 as well.
Okay.
So it's just product placement wall to wall. It's gaudy, it's ridiculous, it's over the top. If you're into Formula One, you've already seen this. Like, nothing I tell you is going to make you dissuade you in any kind of way, shape, or form. I would say if you are agnostic about it, which I was going in, it's enjoyable. But I don't know if it's, I mean, I'm certainly not going to start watching Formula One off the back of this. Like, you know,
okay.
Like, anyway, it didn't sell me on Formula One enough for me to start watching it in any kind of meaningful way. Like, Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen are in it, but they literally just walk past the screen and wave at them and keep going. Like, it's literally, that's literally it. And Lewis Hamilton is an executive producer on this. Now, the level of his involvement, as I understand it, was he basically just talked to the director for 10 minutes and was like, yeah, they don't do that, they do this. Put that camera there, that'll look a bit cooler. Okay, cool, bye. And collects like half a bajillion euro for doing that, like, you know.
He sounds bitter about it, doesn't he?
No, I mean, listen, like, if someone drove a truck full of money up to my house and was like, hey, will you be a producer on this film? Sure, no problem.
I'm waiting for the action version of a radio presenter or a film.
Right? Come on, yeah, we can all cash in on this. But yeah, no, look, it's fine. Like, it's enjoyable, it's grand. It's not rewriting any kind of, you know, story about it. Like, if you wanted a really good racing film, Ford v Ferrari is a far better film.
Oh, I love Ford v Ferrari.
So good.
Really good.
So good. Yeah. Or if you're particular about Formula One, I would recommend Ron Howard's Rush. That was about Niki Lauda and James Hunt. Yeah, what?
How many years ago was that?
Oh, it's a few years.
Yeah,
like 10,
super
10
years. Film.
Yeah, great film. Anthony Dodd-Mantle did the cinematography, and he did it for 28 Days Later. Brilliant Formula One film. This is fine. This is grand. This is a technical exercise. It's grand. That's as
but
much as I
you
can
know
say
the way, like, when Top Gun Maverick came out, people really did like it.
Oh, not people that, loved it. Yeah.
But
she cried at it.
Yeah,
but Fiona Jones cried at it.
But it was kind of a fun popcorn movie rather than anyone was taking it that seriously.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think part of it, see, this is the thing, right? I think one of the reasons why people, and I certainly connected with it emotionally as well, is because, one, you had the cruiser, and I, like, Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise are not in the same league at all, as far as I'm concerned. Because Tom Cruise, when he goes in there, my God, say what you want about Scientology, that man gives 110% every time he's on screen. Whereas Brad Pitt, he's laconic, he's Robert Redford, you know, he's all like, oh, I'm too good for any of this. And that can work in certain contexts, but it's Formula One, it doesn't really work. Also, as well as the fact that Top Gun, when it came out in 1986, I want to say, you know, it was real, like it was Reagan's America, you know, the kind of way it was like, oorah, you know, there was a lot of sort of American exceptionalism. It almost had a little bit of DNA, I think, with the right stuff, you know, that sort of way, this real idea of like, you know, machinery and like, you know, being the best and yeah. And the film kind of tapped into it, but I think in a very kind of interesting way where it's like, okay, you were the best at what you did, but like, what has that really got you? You're basically living a monk's life and you have no connection to it and you're kind of a ghost of a person. So there was really kind of interesting stuff in it. This, however, is just, it's Top Gun Maverick, but with all of the emotional kind of stuff just stripped out of it and you're just left with the pyrotechnics, which again is fine, but not enough to kind of hold your hat onto, I think.
Okay. All right. So it was just meh.
Yeah, really. It's good. No, it's good.
3 out of 5 over generous then.
Yeah.
No, 3 out of 5 is, I mean, like, again, I really can't oversell how amazing it looks, but there's nothing else going on there. That's the thing. Like, it's just very kind of hollow.
They call that style over substance.
That is true, yeah. Mm. But yeah, all sizzle, no steak.
Speaking of, Shane says, if you like fish and red wine, eat your fish and drink your wine. I like ribeye steak with a nice crisp vino verde. Good for you, Shane. There's no rule against that. It's just that in this particular scene, this guy asked that question, which I thought it was a bit basic.
It's a very basic question because I feel like I knew that before I started working in wine when I was 18.
Same, like, yeah. And I don't drink wine.
Like, somehow I managed to learn that in secondary school.
There's going to be a Social Network 2.
There sure is. Mm. It's not like we're short of content necessarily. Yeah, Aaron Sorkin is directing Social Network Part 2. It's coming from Sony Pictures. It's not going to be like a straight sequel, but rather kind of like a follow-up and to be like, oh, look at what's happened since with our social networks. Isn't it all really bad, generally speaking? The Sorkin's original screenplay was based on, there was a couple of Wall Street Journal, I think it was covered in a lot of places, but I think it broke in Wall Street Journal in October 2021, the Facebook files, which basically showed that it was a lot of whistleblowers basically saying that Facebook and Meta and whoever else were like acutely aware of the harm that Facebook was doing, the content it was pushing out, particularly to like young audiences, and they didn't really care. They just wanted to maximise profits. So I think that's an interesting angle. Question mark. Is Sorkin maybe, could it, I don't know.
He's going to direct it though.
Because he's directing it as well. Yeah, yeah.
Which is iffy.
Yeah.
He's not a great director.
I think people were like, fine for the screenplay, don't direct it, please. But he is now, so.
Okay, big long speeches then.
Yeah.
No, walk and talk.
Nobody draws breath for hours. So yeah, so it's not really about Facebook per se. It's about like social media in general and how terrible it all is.
Yeah, I think, and maybe more so kind of like, because obviously Meta owns Instagram now, so it'll be like a bit of that. I think it's going to be less about the interpersonal beefs and obviously what was going on there and how that all fell apart with Zuck and co., and more about that, I think. To which I say, is that a particularly interesting movie? Because I see the horrors on my phone all day long, you know?
Yeah.
I'm aware. I'm actually very aware.
I know, yeah. So is it telling us anything we don't know already?
But sure, like, think of like all that stuff. Like, remember like Dope Sick, for example, like, and it was all about the opioid crisis. Yeah. Like, if they took that kind of approach to it, that might be interesting. Because like, again, everyone knew about the opioid crisis. Everyone knew that the Sackler family were behind it and doing this just to maximise profits and da-da-da-da-da. And if they take the same kind of approach as well, I think that could
maybe
be interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And do we have a Bond director? Is it 100% certain he's going to be there?
This is confirmed. Denis Villeneuve.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Finally pronounced it correctly. He is tapped to direct. Huge Bond fan. Previously did the Dunes and other things. I think this has been like kind of 2 thumbs up from all the Bond people, because with the Amazon news, I think people were a bit worried, like, what is happening to my precious franchise and my precious 007? But Denis is obviously a very established director, loves Bond. Like, even in a statement, he says it's a massive responsibility, very exciting, huge honour. Like, in 2021, he was like, I want to direct a Bond film. I would love to. It's my dream.
Okay.
So you'd imagine then you're in kind of safe hands. But he's kind of a bit of a weirdo. Do you know what I mean? In the sense that I think he could maybe, I say this as someone who's not invested in Bond at all, but the Bond people in my life seemed very excited about this and kind of thinking that he could bring something, dare I say, fresh to this.
A je ne sais quoi.
A je ne sais quoi.
Weirdo in what way?
I just think he could.
Oh no, he's a freak. Like, I mean, like, no, 100%. Have you ever seen Sicario?
Yeah.
Stylistically, cast-wise, I think he could look at, go for people that you wouldn't. Whatever Bond conversation we're having, I think he'd go, forget that. We're going to do
something else. Yeah. Like,
That's why I'm asking, is it 100%? Because Oh, he might, so he might try to do that, but then the kind of the suits and Amazon say nope.
But in fairness, like I would say, like Amy Pascal is one of the producers on this, and she, I would think, would be smart enough to get out of the way and leave him do what he wants to do with it. My only kind of sort of that gives me pause about it, right, is one, I want them to finish doing Messiah. He's got to finish that because you can't leave doing the way it is. You got to finish it. Just got to do it. But also as well is the fact that Sam Mendes and, you know, the other directors that have been on Bond, you know, since the finish, they kind of went everywhere there was to go with it. You know, that kind of way. Like, they really did go into deep psychological stuff with it. So it's like, I'm delighted that he's doing it. I'd love to see what he does with it. But I'm kind of thinking to myself, have they just written them? Have they written Bond into a corner? How are you going to make this relevant for the modern age when it's already being made relevant and then irrelevant?
Yeah.
And then who's going to play him? Like, you know, that kind of way. Is it going to be Aaron Taylor-Johnson? I hope not.
We shall see. Anyway, you are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We do have to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes. Let's toast his success.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
You can share some with me. I'm in Nace.
Yeah.
If you're coming here,
that's your most compelling argument.
I've got nice wine. Okay, so our next wine is a red, and you can see it's a big, dark, velvety, voluptuous style of red. I think Sean's going to love this.
I do.
It's right up your street, actually. Yeah. I remember because you really loved the Trump wine.
Yeah. That was trash.
Did you bring in the Trump wine?
Yeah, you did. No,
you missed all the big news stories.
It was so hilarious. It was exactly what you'd expect a Trump wine to look like.
Like shit.
It was trash dressed up in a, you know, in a
lovely bottle.
Yeah.
This is not trash. I don't know why I compared it to a Trump wine.
No,
it's not trash. Okay, so this
I drank the Trump wine, to be honest. I will admit that. I had a snack box with it. I thought that was fine.
Lovely. Perfect pairing. Absolutely. So this is a red wine from the Penedès region from a producer called Pardas. Again, these guys farm organically because you have to. You can see the label is amazing. So they do a different Lego.
That's cool.
It is really cool. Isn't it?
Tractor. Yeah.
They do a different Lego tractor for every vintage. So if you're into it, you could collect your tractors.
I noticed there's a white wine that has, it's got tractors on it. It's called Massey something, as in Massey.
Massey Dacta. It's a Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand.
Yeah.
They're not related.
I know, but is this a whole thing now, tractor wine?
Oh, I think it's like aiming cool
for the farmer market.
These guys are actual farmers. When you go there, it's really, really rustic. And we went to visit the winery and they had a football table there. Now, I am born competitive. It's nearly like a disability. I'm so aggressive.
Like a foosball table?
Yeah. So anyway, it was the coolest winery I've ever been in. And we sat for lunch and they had like a record player and they were playing Neil Young and we were enjoying all these wines. These guys are like the coolest guys. But the quality of wines is absolutely superb. So if you were to have a taste of this, this one is called Neige Franc. And there are two grapes in it. One is Cabernet. So one of the grapes that goes into Bordeaux, it's Cabernet Franc. And the other one is a grape that would have, I was on the verge of extinction up until 20, 25 years ago, called Sumol, which is put into this wine. And it's kind of grippy and tanniny. And when you taste this, I mean, the colour of the wine, and red wines taste like the colour they are, this is black kind of fruit, cassis fruit.
What are the percentages between the Cabernet Franc?
I'd be very heavily Cabernet Franc, to be honest. And this is 2019 vintage. So this is already 6 years old. So when you taste this, you'll see that it's not like wham, bam, fresh juice. It's layered and savoury. And as a wine gets a little bit older, it develops those more savoury notes. And I feel like if you love a really, really good Australian Cabernet, this is for you. Because it has all that. It's like pure instant gratification in this wine. You taste it straight away. You smell it straight away. It really, really delivers. And so these guys specialise in the local grapes from the region. So originally when Cava became huge, however many 60 odd years ago, it was all about, you know, don't put in the local grape varieties. If you want to sell anything, it has to be Chardonnay. It has to be Cabernet. It has to be all the big famous ones. But what these guys do, like this grape Sumol, there's a white grape called Chirello. They really have tried to bring about what the history of the region is, like Catalonian independence.
Yeah.
So you can, that mentality is in how they farm, it's how they grow things, it's how they produce wine. It's just an amazing property. And so I would really recommend, now if they let you in, because you'd have to call and beg.
Yeah.
We were lucky. We were actually, one of our importers brought a few of us out. We were really, really lucky and it was the most fun, but it was just such a special trip because sometimes you go places and they're commercial, but Penedès really has this beating heart of I can't think of the words, passion.
Yeah, okay.
in everything that they do and everywhere you went and all the food dishes you had, it wasn't like you were having anything you could get anywhere. It was all local food. And anyway, so I just love this wine. I think it's really, really excellent, excellent value for money, and drinking really well. Now, for normally, if you're going to buy wine, if you're going to buy a bottle of Bordeaux from 2019, you'd buy a lot of, spend a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
Someone else has aged it. This is the current release and it's 6 years old.
Okay, that's it's absolutely delicious. It really is. Right, okay, we'll move on to 50 Cent has joined Street Fighter.
Amazing. There's perfect headline.
Yeah.
And Orville Peck is going to play Vega. What the hell?
I don't have any connection to any of these characters, but I obviously know like Chun-Li.
Is this a live action rendering of Street
Fighter? Live action, I think, yeah. So it's an adaptation of the Capcom video game.
You can just see your eyes glazing
up. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
I didn't realise this was, so obviously it's like the classic arcade game and like 1991, Street Fighter 2, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But they've been releasing stuff up until like 2023 and won awards and stuff like that. But yeah, this is a live action adaptation. 50 Cent has joined the cast. He's joining Jason Momoa, Noah Centineo, Orville Peck, as Brian just mentioned. Chun-Li is the character that I know and probably most people would even know in passing in pop culture. She's being played by Kalina Liang. 50 Cent is going to play Balrog, a disgraced boxer who's also the bodyguard of the villain. And he's apparently deep in training and will be doing his own stunts.
Yeah, so and Jason Momoa is going to play Blanca as well. So yeah, it's a nuts. It's a great cast. And like really, like it's in like the.
But like, how does it translate when it's two people boxing the head? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm not trying to be dramatic. Okay. It's a fighting
it's
game.
It's not like, I know a lot of games now, like The Last of Us, have actual plot lines. This, as you say, is just people beating the head off each other.
No, 100%. Okay, the
and
argument
ding dong noises. As well.
Okay, the argument I would give is if you have seen the most recent adaptation of Mortal Kombat, that is absolutely the way to go about it.
Okay.
Which is to say, lean into how stupid it is. So what they do in Mortal Kombat is they basically just have made this like very gory, like 80s kind of like over the top, explicit, just gnarly as hell kind of horror film that just happens to have a lot of lad kicking the crap out of each other and they're ninjas. So with Street Fighter, it was always a little bit more kind of like PG-13. So I'd imagine if they're playing, you know, if they've got like 50 Cent, if they've got Jason Momoa and have Orville Peck, I would assume they're kind of like leaning into the silliness of it all, because Street Fighter was always a little bit more kind of cartoony. And like, you know, people would have said like 5-10 years ago, there's no way you can make a film out of Minecraft. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
No one's going to watch it. But yet people did watch it.
Indeed.
It became a huge thing.
We better move on to our second movie of the day. It is Ran. Here's the clip. Well, he gave away the entire plot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, what a spoiler. I apologize to the listeners about that. Well, it is an adaptation of King Lear.
Yes.
Is it very King Lear?
Quite King Lear. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, okay, the basic premise is there, which is aging feudal warlord decides to gift his kingdom, if you like, to his three sons, but then he soon realizes that his three sons have basically become the product of the chaos and the war and strife that he has made in the world. And then they start to kind of fight each other, and then in the process then the father goes mad and is driven into exile, and then he has to find his way back. This is directed by Akira Kurosawa. He did this in 1985. It's back in select cinemas for the 40th anniversary 4K remaster. This is considered to be one of Kurosawa's best films. It's incredible. If you've never seen it in a cinema, you absolutely, like, as much as we're talking about you need to see Formula One in a cinema, this is on the same level. This is like Lawrence of Arabia or Bridge on the River Kwai. The real way to see this is to see it in a cinema. If you've had any kind of, if you've watched like Game of Thrones, or if you watched, you know, Shogun, the TV series, they're getting it from this. This is where it comes from. This is like the original, pure, uncut source. Akira Kurosawa, these samurai films that he made, obviously, and like, you know, even how he adapts Shakespeare as well is really, really fascinating, because this is the third of his adaptations. He did Macbeth back in the 50s. And it was called Throne of Blood, brilliant film. And then he did Hamlet, and that was called The Bad Sleep Well. And it was this kind of like neo-noir Tokyo kind of thriller. Brilliant. But this is like the one that he got everything. Like, it was one of his most expensive films. It was the only time he was ever nominated for an Oscar for Best Director. It ended up winning, I think, Best Costume. But
and in those days, a foreign language film getting
unheard
that kind
of.
Yeah.
Absolutely unheard of for a foreign language film to be even within striking distance of an Oscars. Never mind getting nominated for one or two little kind of things. But it's incredible. Lighthouse has it. I'm pretty certain the IFI has it as well. I think the iCinema in Galway has it, I think it as well. But yeah, you'll have to go look for it. But if you have any kind of interest in like spaghetti westerns, big epic, you know, medieval battle sequences, brilliant drama, incredible music as well. Like the soundtrack is kind of adapted from Gustav Mahler's symphonies, has this real kind of like, you know, ghostly, horror-esque kind of vibe to it. It looks incredible. Just absolutely worth seeing. Just go see it.
Thanks a million, lads. We've run out of time for today. Brian Lloyd, Michelle Lawler and Fionnuala Jones there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.